at the bottom of page six, is that where we were? The best and most effective way for me to build a joyful identity comes by developing a tender heart towards weakness. Did y'all hear that? So if you want to create a joyful identity, which we all should want that, then the best way to do that is by learning how to develop a tender heart towards weakness in yourself and in other people. This tender and joyful response comes from viewing weakness as an opportunity to care. So when you see weakness in somebody, instead of criticizing or judging, your response instead is to see it as an opportunity to care. Yeah. So if you don't, if you're highlighting, I would encourage you to highlight that one. Joy levels increase around people who respond warmly and kindly to weakness. When we fear being shamed for our weaknesses, we will try to hide our problems. That's another one that's worth highlighting. Without gentle protector skills, everyone operates as a predator or a possum or both. My response to the weakness in others will determine whether I'm operating as a predator, possum, or protector. That's how you know what response style you're in, is by how you are responding to the weakness in another person. And I have another saying, pay attention to what you're paying attention to. Most of the time we don't pay attention to what's going on up here. And it's eye-opening when you start paying attention to what you're actually saying in your head about other people, about yourself, etc. Both predators and protectors watch for weaknesses in others. When those with predatory behavior see weakness, they see it as a time to pounce, a time to get something. They often use people as a step up to the next step. But when gentle protectors see the weakness in another person, they see it as a time to protect, a time to give. Gentle protectors in scripture, there's some passages here that I put. There are more. Again, I just put a few. Yeshua describes himself in Matthew 11:29. It's the only time he describes himself, and what he says about himself is, I am gentle and humble in heart. Now, that's Yahweh. Yeshua is Yahweh, and Yahweh's saying, you want to know who I am, what I look like, how I live? I am gentle and humble. How much more do you think we should be? Gentle and humble. That's a gentle protector. Philippians 4:5 says, let your gentle spirit, that's talking about us, let your gentle spirit be known to all men. The Lord is near. 1 Thessalonians 2:7, but we prove to be gentle among you, like a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children. 1 Timothy 3:3, this is talking about elders. Don't be addicted to wine or pugnacious. I need to look up that word, pugnacious. Somebody look that up real quick. Cindy knows what it is, I bet. What does it mean? I knew it. Cindy's our walking dictionary around here.
Means be ready to fight all the time.
Ready to fight?
Somebody that's ready to fight, pick a fight, start a fight.
Like
a boxer's got his gloves up all the time, he's ready to fight.
Got it. So don't be addicted to fighting. That's what that said. Ready to fight. But instead be gentle, peaceable, free from the love of money. Have y'all ever stopped to think about the fact that we're commanded to be gentle? It's not an option. Titus 3:2. Don't malign anyone, that means speak badly of them, but we're to be peaceable, gentle, showing every consideration for all men. James 3:17. But the wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, reasonable, full of mercy and good fruits, unwavering, without hypocrisy. 1 Peter 3:4, but let it be the hidden person of the heart with the imperishable quality of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is precious in the sight of God. 2 Corinthians 10:1. Now I, Paul, myself urge you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ, I who am meek when face to face with you, but bold toward you when absent. So these are just a few of the passages that describe believers and the Lord himself as being meek and gentle. So I think we all can see the foundation that's there for us to live this way. Okay? Let's talk about pseudo joy cravings. Chronic low joy creates at least 4 common problems that will keep us from experiencing relational joy. Number one, when we experience upset or hardship, we won't be able to maintain strong joy bonds with Yahweh or other people. These are the effects of having chronic low joy. That means you're not glad to be with the Lord, you're not glad to be with people in a chronic way, like ongoing. So that means if you have that scenario where you aren't really glad to be with the Lord and aren't really glad to be with people, then when you experience hardship or trouble, you're not going to be able to maintain that strong, I'm glad to be with you, feeling with Yahweh or other people, because you don't have it. Number two, you will most likely be lacking in some relational skills needed to form and maintain joyful relationships. Number three, you will likely view your relationships with suspicion and doubt. Number four, you will be strongly motivated by anxiety, fear, and the driving need to avoid shame, failure, disappointment, and rejection. And that will set you up for what we're going to look at now, beeps. If our lives are low in the someone is glad to be with me department, that relational pain that you'll feel because of that will set you up to crave joy substitutes. This fake joy provides temporary pleasure, which will help us be unaware of any internal distress and painful emotions. So the fake joy numbs you, and so that you don't notice the pain that you're feeling. These joy substitutes create pseudo joy. It's a counterfeit joy. It's artificial, this feeling of joy that's not real. That's created when fake joy stimulates the pleasure center of your brain and releases dopamine. A high joy brain is less likely to develop harmful attachments to beeps. Happiness and excitement are often a substitute for joy because they're based on non-relational external circumstances that are not the same thing as relational joy. Happiness is based on your happenings. The things that are happening in your life create happiness. That is not what joy is. Joy is not dependent on your situation or your circumstances. It's dependent on your relationship with Yeshua. So it's not happiness. Are you happy? Well, you might be, or you might not be. And you might not be happy, but you might have joy. Because I know, for example, in the ICU, Danny's having surgery. I don't know what's going on. And I had joy. Was I happy? Did I like what was going on? No. But I had joy because the Lord was with me and I knew it. And I knew he was with Danny. And I knew that not one demon or any power could take his life unless Yeshua said, come home.
That's right. Mm, that's right.
And so there was joy. Was I laughing? No. But I had joy. Yes, Sally, my microphone. I'm itching up here with this poison ivy, but I had joy.
Be healed in the name of Yeshua.
Yes.
Yes. I just think that's fascinating how the Lord built that in for us, was looking out for us to have joy in the midst of no matter what's going on in life, you know, in our days, that we have that ability to grow that at any age, no matter what our childhood was like, right, or our life. I just think that's just amazing, and it's who he is, right? So
keep talking. I got
so I think it's fascinating that the Lord is keeping our teacher teaching in the midst of adversity.
Yes, that's right.
You know, and that through persevering, the joy set before her, which is him,
yes,
we also can be splashed with the joy that's set before us, which is him.
Right.
And here we are in the midst of just an afternoon of beautiful pictures. And,
I'll save you, Sally. Yep. Something.
Okay, Cindy's coming to my rescue. Hallelujah. Passing the mic.
Passing some time.
So I get that, and I agree with what Rhonda said and Sally said, but if there's someone sitting in this room that does not have the joy of the Lord yet, that was really hard for me to hear what you just said.
Yeah.
Because I can't just make it happen.
Yeah, right.
I can't.
Thank you.
There we go.
And so there's that place of trying to find that and allow the Lord to do that for me. Because I have it now, but 6 or 8 or 9 months ago, I didn't have it. And there's a very real difference.
Absolutely, and the whole point here is to show you what is supposed to be,
yes,
and what is available.
Yes.
Is it going to take some time to get there? Probably.
I was relieved when I realized that joy was a fruit of the Spirit, then I didn't have to produce it.
Yes.
And I would just try to pray it into my spirit every day and ask God for it.
Yeah.
That it's, I mean, it's a huge relief that I don't have to work that up.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I have it yet, but it's coming.
Yeah.
And I agree with all that's been said, and just to add to what I was saying, like, I think I was looking at it also from a standpoint of when I haven't had it, like, just that there's that hope there, that it's an option, and that he has something for us to reach for, too. That was just another addition, but thank you for that addition, too.
And remember, again, like Sue said, it is a fruit of the Spirit, but it isn't laughter. It isn't joy like we tend to view it. It's more of a sense that because he's with me, because I belong to him and he belongs to me, I can trust him and it's okay.
Yes.
And I can just go, you know, it doesn't have to be this adrenaline kind of laugh. It can be, but that isn't all that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly it's that you know that you belong.
I think for me it's a stability in my upset.
Yeah.
The bottom doesn't drop out anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can maintain that joy. And it's there because I know he's there.
Yep. Amen.
Yeah, that's well said.
So happiness is an emotion, but joy is a belief system. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
Then I'm going to leave it at that. If that feels good.
Yeah. And it's a belief system, but it's like faith without works is dead. that's a belief system, but you got to put some action to it.
Right.
So joy has that aspect of action, because we have a responsibility in it.
Yes.
So I like that.
I like that too.
So what I'm hearing is that trust in him is foundational for true joy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're not gonna want to be with somebody that you don't trust.
No.
All right. Not for long and not very close.
Yeah.
So there has to be a measure of trust in order for us to be glad to be with him. And as you allow him to get a little closer and a little closer, that grows and grows and grows. So, yeah. Good. I like it. I like all the discussions. Okay? All right. Oh, Christy.
She's coming in.
I know, I didn't know if I should say it or not, but it's like I've been coming to the farm now for, it'll be 2 years in November, I guess. And so when we have this, the community living, and it's like that's how you learn it, is by being around people that have it. And so when I come here, and it's like they truly are happy to see you. And at first I was like, like they're not really happy to see me. No, but they really are.
Yeah.
Right. And so, and then before I started doing God encounters, like I knew about God. I knew about Yeshua, and I knew what he could do. And, you know, that kind of built my faith, but then they introduced me to him. Mm-hmm. And so that changed everything. And so now, you know, when there's a something bad going on in my life, like I just connect with him, like I know everything's going to be okay.
Yep.
He's got me. So it's like that, you know, it's like the joy of the Lord is my strength, and that's the truth. So but it's like coming here and seeing it in action has changed everything for me.
Yeah. And again, that's what I said, this is something that has to be modeled. Your brain has to see it in order for it to duplicate it. You can't read it and get it. You can read it and get the information and say, I want that, but you still have to find it. And the Lord will model it for you.
Yes.
You know? So if you go, oh, I don't have anybody that's modeling joy, protector, skills, well, the Lord will.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. That's right. So, okay. All right, looks like we're good to go. Let's look at beeps. Beep, beep. Beeps are joy substitutes that take the place of joyful, life-giving connections with Yahweh and other people. Beeps are an acronym for behaviors, events, experiences, people, and substances. Beeps are what we use when we don't have high joy and our tank is in the deficit. We may have never had high joy. We may have always had low joy, and we learned as a child to use a beep or beeps plural in order to get that feeling that we all want, that tells us we're okay. And so when we use beeps, we are actually turning our back on the source of true joy, Yeshua, and we're walking into the wrong kingdom. This is idolatry. I'll call it what it is. It's idolatry. You're using something that this world has to offer you to try to get a dopamine hit. Because dopamine makes you feel good about yourself and about your life. It also helps you forget about what you want to forget about. So I don't want to sugarcoat beeps. They are sin. They are idolatry. They are using something of this world for you to either self-protect, self-promote, make you feel good, etc., etc. So, here comes the mic.
Oh boy. Is that old boy?
Oh boy.
I love you, Sue.
So,
name it over here.
What? Oh. So, are antidepressants sin?
Uh-oh. Oh. Dun, dun, dun. I'm going to say that between you and the Lord. Mm-hmm. He will tell you if you need them or not. And if he tells you to use them, you use them. You could put a whole list on there, add to that any prescription. You gotta ask the Lord. I believe that's one of the things that happened at the fall, where Adam set the stage and put it in our DNA, Adam and Eve and their children, that we would, instead of turning to Yahweh for answers, we would turn to self. And Adam, I believe, recognized in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil that if he ate from it, like God, Yahweh said, he would be like God. And he would know for himself between good and evil. That means he wouldn't have to go to Yahweh to get answers anymore. He would be his own God. And he could live apart from Yahweh if he chose to. And he chose to. And as a result of that, here we are about 6,000 years down the road with our DNA, and our society in America that's so independent. You know, we're just born in it and raised in it and taught it that we can be independent and live for ourselves and the great American dream and et cetera, et cetera. And not ask Yahweh. You know, we've mistaken good for God. Yeah. The tree of the knowledge of good. That tree had good in it. And we tend to look at something and do the pros and cons. And man, if the pros outweigh the cons, and we say, that's good, let's do it. And that's so self-centered, so self-focused. It's so anti the tree of life, where Yahweh designed us to make him our source of knowledge. He was meant to be our source for information and knowledge, and this other tree taught us to decide for ourselves. So that's why I say ask the Lord. I think we should be asking the Lord about everything. And somebody one time heard me say that, and that came to me and said, so do you ask him if you can go to the bathroom? I won't tell you what I wanted to say. So if the Lord tells you to ask him if you can go to the bathroom, then you go right ahead. That's not my business. That's not your business either, what I'm doing. So let's just, as we go through this list, you're going to see why these are all not healthy for us. They're not good for us in a Yahweh way, right? So beeps include, on those five things, comfort food, sex, work, performance, seeking approval, things that cause pleasure, codependent relationships, excitement or adrenaline, gambling, entertainment, alcohol, travel, creativity, what? Drugs, these can all be beeps. Now, you can be creative and not sin, right? You can travel and not sin. You can work and not sin. I'm not saying that these are in and of themselves sinful. It's when we use them to numb out or escape or seek self-pleasure, self-seeking, rather than seeking the Lord that makes them sin. Do you know the tree of the knowledge of good and evil in and of itself wasn't sinful? You know, the only reason that tree was evil was because Yahweh said, don't eat it. Don't eat it. That's what made it sin. So that's why I say, ask him. And if a lot of these things have addictive, can become extremely addictive quickly and easily. So that's another hint that might not be good for you in a Yahweh good. I remember teaching the Tree of Life teaching in Heston, Kansas, and somebody during the teaching on the Tree of the Knowledge of Good and Evil and the Tree of Life asked me, said, well, what is good then? And I thought, you know what? I don't know. I don't know. So I told the whole, I don't know. That night, in the middle of the night, I wake up with the thunderous voice of Yahweh in my bedroom, wakes me straight out of a dead sleep, a living sleep. And I sit up, and the Lord says to me, everything that proceeds from me is good. And then immediately I saw the cross. Now you tell me, the mother of Yeshua, Mary, and John standing at the foot of that cross called that thing good. No way.
Right.
But Yahweh did. It, because he said it was good, it was good.
Yes.
The suffering we all go through,
it's good.
I look at it, I don't want to call it good, but my father calls it good. He tells me that if we endure the testing of our faith, it's going to produce endurance. That's a good work.
Yes.
So we have this distorted view of what's good and what's not good. You get, and I get, one opportunity in our life, our existence, to suffer. Just one. Before you came, your spirit came here. I believe your spirit was with the Father. And he put your spirit in your mother's womb. And you're going to have whatever number of years he's allotted for you, an opportunity to suffer. An opportunity for him to test your faith. And that's important, that he tests your faith. Not because he's wanting to prove you're no good or whatever, but because he knows that the testing of your faith will produce endurance. And he happens to know what's coming down the road. I don't. He knows what I'm going to have to face a year from now. And he knows how much endurance capacity I need to have to be able to walk through that thing and remain faithful. So he's going to orchestrate the events of my life today and next week, and so that together he and I can manage to get through that thing down the road.
Yes.
And I'm grateful for that.
Yes.
I'm thankful for that. That's his responsibility to do that. He's my daddy. He's my Abba, my father. And he has a responsibility to raise me up and mature me. And he says over and over and over through the scriptures, it's so clear that he isn't expecting us to save ourselves. Just the opposite. I will do it. Even I've heard people say, I'm building his church. No, you're not. I'm sorry. Pastor, you're not building his church. If you are, you might want to stop and look around. Because Yeshua said to Peter, on this rock, I will build my church. I will, not you. He didn't ask those apostles to go build his church. He said, I'm going to do it. And he does it through partnership with us. We're his hands and his feet and his mouth, but we're not doing it. He's doing it. So for us to recognize, acknowledge, accept, and learn to live out of that reality that it's all about him. I mean, bottom line, this life that I've been given is meant to be all about him. And I get this one opportunity to suffer. Because when I leave this body, I will never, ever suffer again. Ever. Not in any way. Not emotionally, not physically, not mentally, not relationally. No poison ivy.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. No more suffering. And if Yeshua had to suffer to learn obedience, how much more do I need to suffer? Because I am so far from who he is. And so now when we suffer, we have the opportunity to respond one way or the other. We will either turn to a beep to try to numb that thing and quiet it and get it to shut up. Oh, I'm no good. I'm just a loser. I'm a whatever. Let me just take this piece of chocolate cake and ice cream and potato chips and I'll be better in a minute.
Red X.
Red X. Yes, thank you. Or whatever your thing is, whatever your beat tends to be. Or we can choose to turn to Yahweh and say, help, help.
Yes.
Lord told me one time one of the most powerful prayers he hears is, help.
Yeah.
He said, you use all these words. Right. Help works. Help. And he's faithful.
Yes.
And he's just to complete and perfect what he's begun in us.
Yes.
If we will allow him to do so. And these beeps get in our way. They keep us from him. So the good news for every one of us is that we can grow joyful skills and bonds no matter how old we are. Yahweh designed our brains to be able to be transformed. It's called neuroplasticity. And I just love that he created our brains that way. So there are things that intentionally we can do that helps that process, and that's what we're going to be talking about this week. I want to talk about relational attachments now, because joy is all about, I'm glad to be with you, it's all about belonging. So without you being able to have relational attachments, you won't have joy and you won't feel like you belong. You'll feel all alone, and that is, for a human being, that is the most desperate, painful place a person can be, is when they feel like they don't belong. Neuroscientists say that there's no greater pain than that one for a human being, that I don't belong. So relational attachments, there's two kinds of attachments that we all are meant to be able to form. Number one is a two-way attachment, where it's two people. That is the first and best place to start practicing growing joy. I'm glad to be with you, is between two people. And we're meant to do that with Yeshua, you and Yeshua, that's a two-way bond, and you and another person. Secondly, joy capacity increases in people who are married and those who have a strong bond with a family member or a close friend. So when you build this two-way bond, your joy capacity will increase. Everybody has a certain joy capacity. And by joy capacity, I mean whatever your ability capacity is, however much upset you can handle experience is your joy capacity. Let's say you're able to handle, let's say I'm gonna pick on you, Julie, because you have a fantastic joy capacity. So let's just say Julie here, she's got a quart-sized joy capacity. And that's pretty big. And then her husband accidentally breaks her favorite canning jar.
Oh, my God. You're right here.
And on the same day, her pressure cooker canner breaks.
Oh.
Now we're, come on, we're getting there. And then she opens the jar for supper of canned stuff she made last year, and they're all molded.
Oh, boy.
Now, her joy capacity with that one just got over the top. Now she doesn't, now she's no more joy left. It's to the brim and spilling over. That means she's gonna become somebody that she's not, like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. She's got some choices there. Now, she's a mature Christian that knows these principles, that has practiced her relational skills. She's going to recognize, oops, that's it, straw that broke the camel's back, I am done. Now she's gonna say, she's gonna decide, am I gonna give in to this? Am I gonna have a fit, have a bad attitude? Or am I gonna surrender and be thankful and grateful? Depending on what she chooses as to what happens, right? If she chooses to be thankful and grateful, she'll stay out of a triggered state. But if she chooses to be irritated and frustrated, and she's gonna go right down that rabbit hole. Most of the time, it happens so fast that you don't catch it. That's why it's important that we know this and that we have that history of a lot, increasing our joy capacity and growing in joy so that we have a greater capacity to handle the upsets in life. That is part of James 1, where it says that he's testing our faith. We go through things so that our joy capacity will increase. And if she passes the test, her joy capacity actually grows even bigger. And the next time, she can handle five jars being moldy and three breaking, and right? And it won't even faze her. It takes intentional, purposeful, heart commitment to do this. It won't just happen to you. We have to decide, this is what I want, Lord. I want to have a large joy capacity because Yeshua, yours is endless. Look at his joy capacity on the cross. In the Garden of Gethsemane. And then on the cross, with every different test that he went through, he remained true to who he was. He never switched to Jekyll, Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. He never did. Even to the point of saying, Father, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. He stayed true to who he is. His joy capacity was limitless. He was still glad to be with all those people, slapping him in the face, spitting on his face, pulling his beard out, whipping him, and on and on and on. That's the kind of joy capacity that we all need. And that's the kind that will allow us to be martyred. His. And if we can recognize that and recognize, like Sue said, I don't have to do this, but I know a man in the middle on the cross. And he can do this. And because of him, I can endure this. So it really matters the size of your joy capacity. And the only way that thing's going to grow is by you surrendering your life, submitting your life to the Lord, and saying, like John the Baptist, that he would increase and I would decrease. That's the only way John the Baptist could do what he did, because he had that in his heart from the beginning. You must increase and I must decrease. And don't get it flipped around. We often say that one backwards. I hear it all the time. If you flip that thing around and say, I must decrease, you just made it all about you. You just said, I have to do this so that he can increase. Come on. I used to do that. And one day I woke up and went, whoa, 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 backwards. That's not what he said. Yahweh, would you increase in me so that I can decrease? That's how we grow and mature. So with the two-way bonds, I want to encourage you to be careful about forming two-way bonds with someone of the opposite sex, because this bond is so intense that it can lead you down a path you don't want to go. Two-way bonds are best done with spouses or a friend that's of the same gender as you are, because of the powerful nature of two-way bonds when they're done right. Codependency can happen so fast. That's why three-way bonds are so important. Three-way bonds are the safest relationships in which we can grow and practice our joy skills while increasing our joy capacity, because they don't have the same intensity as two-way bonds. So as you build these two-way bonds and these three-way bonds, you're going to be increasing your joy capacity. That's one of the ways you do it. While secure two-way bonds are an excellent way to grow joy, they do not solidify our identity in the same way as three-way bonds. We need both kinds. So it's a little bit of a challenge for introverts, I've noticed. Because introverts tend to be really happy with just one me, you know. And then bring issue into it, they're really happy, that's good, that's still just one. And then you bring another person into the relationship, that can get a little, and then it's a little challenging. Now, I'll say this, extroverts have a challenge in a different way. They'll want 15 people around them, but they'll never get bonded deep. It'll be surfacey. Now, introverts will bond deeply, usually. So there's the plus and the, you know, the challenges of both. So, but children, as they're developing, need strong joy bonds with two people in order to form a strong identity. And the stronger the joy bonds with these two people, the more their joyful identity will be consistent over time, even when things go wrong. And one of the things that we've lost in America's society is that the father in a family is the one that is responsible before Yahweh to give their children their identity. Mm-hmm. And they're going to give them an identity one way or the other. Mm-hmm. And those children are going to model themselves after that father. Mm-hmm. And the mother, the baby models their brain after the mother for the first 2 years in a big way. As that baby's feeding, the mom's feeding that baby. But at 4 years old, for a boy, that boy at 4 years old brain switches and recognizes, oh, I'm not connected to my mom. Oh, my dad. And he turns, his brain turns and and begins to intentionally download the Father's brain into that boy. It's amazing. It's amazing. If you look at your children and you think back and you go, oh, that's why, you know, I mean, it makes sense. So, down at the bottom of page 9, I really want you all to pay attention to these thought-provoking questions I have in the notebook, because they really will help you see where you're at on your journey. Ask yourself, do I create joy around me? In other words, are other people glad to be with me? If not, why not? And then ask yourself the next question, well, how do I know the answer to that? And look at your relationships. That's what that question is meant to do, is get you to look at your relationship and discover the truth of them. Any questions on this subject before we go on? Deborah over here. Al's going to get his workout today.
I think I'm processing through it, but I kind of want to get a check on that. So earlier you were talking about, you were using the example of Julie and like getting upset and everything, and then like whether we are in a place of maturity or not, I was kind of in my brain like, how do you not dress religiously masked if you learn to do that versus, you know, like actually being in maturity? And so the answer I think I got, I'm just kind of checking in, was when it's like all about me or self-protecting, that would be masking, but when it's about him, that would be stepping into the other. Is that correct?
Well, our next subject is wearing a mask.
Oh.
But you can wear a mask for different reasons.
Right.
So here's the thing about triggers. That's what we were talking about, triggers. Most of the time, if that trigger's strong enough, you're not going to be able to mask nothing. It's your mask falls off, and who you really are comes out.
That's true.
Unless it's a mild trigger, and you're able to fake it, right? So it depends on but sooner or later, that trigger's going to be strong enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. I guess maybe like working through that, and like entering into striving, which, you know what I mean, versus like, does that make sense? I'm trying.
Strive, yeah, but here's the goal. The goal is never for you to strive.
Right.
The goal.
Because that's religious.
It can be religious, but it's hard work, and it means it's on you.
Okay.
It's not supposed to be on you.
Gotcha.
It's a surrender.
Right.
Lord, I've got this problem. And I get triggered every time somebody messes with my cannon, because I love my cannon, and it's my thing. And so I need your help, Yeshua. Would you show me the root of this? Would you take me back when I was a little girl and something happened where something that I love was taken from me or stolen or whatever it might be, and you get to the root of it, get it healed, get the Lord to show you the truth, because you're believing a lie. And then what will happen is the next time that event happens, it won't faze you.
Gotcha.
Because you're bringing up implicit memories.
Gotcha.
And causing that trigger.
Thank you. I was just kind of
navigating
through that.
Great question, Deborah. Great thing. And we'll talk about implicit, explicit memories, and we're going to get into some deep stuff as we go on. But remember, if you find yourself striving or wearing a mask, put the brakes on and get help. Because there's something going on if that's happening. Doesn't mean we sit back in our chair and drink milk and eat donuts and
beep beep.
And beep beep, right? Hey, I'm gonna start doing that beep beep now.
Beep beep.
The question has come up before and just came to my can joy bonds be like animals, pets? You know how people have a special pet in their life. You know, maybe they aren't around people as much. I don't know. Just the question. What's your thoughts on?
Yes, absolutely. They are not the same. but absolutely, even to the point where they take the place of humans, and that's not the way it's supposed to be to that degree, but yet. And horses and dogs especially have a unique way to connect, and it's proven to be real, it's there. So. Okay. All right, let's look at mask, page 10. Now that's some joy right there, I'm just saying.
I know, I love that.
Packed in that, what is that, the golf cart?
That's a little red.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah, I think it is red.
Red, oh, yeah.
That was so much.
Yeah, all those beautiful berries.
Oh, goodness.
This is Laura, on the left here is Mim.
Yeah, that's so cool.
She lived here for almost 20 years. 94 years old, just went to be with her children, to move back with her children. And that's Cindy over there with the little baby kids. We're expecting baby goats and kids any day now.
Tomorrow.
Cindy, Sally's prophesying it for a week. It's going to be Tuesday.
It's tomorrow.
So let it be. Deborah's birthday, that's right. Tomorrow we celebrate Deborah's birthday. Okay. Mask. A joyful identity creates in me freedom from fear, which enables me to live without wearing a mask. A joyful identity causes me to believe, in spite of my weaknesses, that I'm loved. That's why you don't have to wear a mask. If you don't believe that, you'll put a mask on. By the time we're teenagers, we've learned to create a social image that people like. Over time, we often wonder if people like our image or us. We find ourselves thinking, if they only knew what I really was like, then they wouldn't like me. Ever thought of that? Or I did. I used to think that all the time. When joy is inconsistent, weak, or missing, then our fear, anxiety, and stress systems begin to shape our brain structure, chemistry, and growth. As a result, some of us created and wear masks of success, performance, perfection, and more. Some people wear a spiritual mask, and some people have an assortment of masks that they can choose from, depending on their environment and situations. Masks that actually work make us dependent on the masks themselves. Over time, we will grow tired of having to keep up appearances. And if we're wearing a mask and we're a possum, we're gonna hide. When the world is not awesome, just hide with a possum.
Oh my.
I know, right? When I first started teaching this a year ago or so on the possums and stuff, every single night I'd go to feed the cat that decided we were his home. And there'd be a possum out there eating his food. And that possum never played dead once. I wanted to see it. I tried scaring him. No, he just looked up at me and started eating again.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So they aren't all, some possums aren't as afraid as other possums is what I came away with.
Yeah, wow, that's brave.
So all masks slowly kill joy even when they work. That mask you might be wearing, pretending to be okay when you're not, or pretending this, that, or the other, it's slowly killing your joy, your ability to be glad to be with other people, and their ability to be glad to be with you. Attachment pain, this is all about belonging. Attachment pain is the deepest level of pain a human can experience, and it is inevitable. Attachment pain happens as a result of losing someone we love because of betrayal, death, divorce, abandonment, moving away, and so much more. Attachment pain causes us to overreact. It's difficult to regulate. Because it adds intensity to everything, it causes even the strongest mask to drop. When you're in the middle of attachment pain, it's very, very, very difficult to wear your mask. And that's when people will see who you really are and who you will, when you will see who you really are. When attachment pain is present, predatory people stop pretending to be nice and they may boldly prey on those that they view as weak. When attachment pain is present, those who live like a possum lose their ability to mask their fear and anxiety and are driven to hide. After all, isolation is better than the pain they feel from a predatory person turning him or her into their supper. And if they can't hide, he or she will become increasingly anxious and may have emotional outbursts. When attachment pain is present and our capacity for joy is low, our brains crave relief and begin to search for a source of external pseudo-joy called beeps to help relieve their internal distress. And many times, we aren't even aware that we're doing so. For example, when you're craving junk food, especially carbs or sugar, you very likely, most likely, are experiencing attachment pain. And if you'll stop, instead of going to get the junk food, if you'll stop and ask yourself, what is going on? What does this mean? What am I really feeling? And find the source of it. Invite the Lord into it and process that attachment pain. There's a really strong possibility that you will avoid the junk. It really is an indicator of attachment pain. I've watched it in my own life since I learned this, and I go, wow. I'm actually feeling attachment pain right here. And all I thought was I wanted some ice cream and chips, red eggs. So, what can I do when I feel attachment pain? The best antidote for attachment pain and its search for pain relief, its search for beeps, is to choose to be thankful and grateful today before you suffer a loss. Learn to be thankful in all things. Make it a habit. So that when that attachment pain comes, your first response is to be thankful and grateful. And 1 Thessalonians 5:18 says, in everything give thanks, for this is God's will for you. Ephesians 5:20, always giving thanks for all things in the name of our Lord. So, and we're going to talk about giving thanks even more because it is, I think it's vital. I think it's critical to being a general protector, being Christ-like. So, and it's definitely a huge asset to your brain. Right? Now we're going to look at two types of trauma. Unhealed trauma, especially in early life, produces a low capacity for joy and high levels of fear and anxiety. Trauma also strongly impacts our ability to regulate upsetting emotions, especially if the trauma is hiding unnoticed in the background. All types of trauma damages our ability to connect with others. Trauma is a joy killer and can cause us to wear a mask to hide our pain. Type A trauma. We had a skit here a couple years ago, and this was our mask with a mop, with mops. Type A trauma. is the absence of good and necessary things that are needed in order to grow a healthy identity and body. Type A trauma is caused by growing up in a chronic low joy environment. It's caused by abandonment, caused by neglect, malnutrition, the lack of appropriate physical touch. Type A trauma produces low joy capacity, unregulated emotions, and unsatisfying relationships. As a result, the brain craves, beeps. People who suffer from type A trauma will wear masks that hide the lack of relational skills so they will appear normal. So type A trauma isn't abuse, it's more like neglect. And it's not having what you should have had. Type B trauma is when bad, wrong, painful things happen, the abuse, and they overwhelm our existing capacity. Type B trauma is caused by verbal, emotional, physical, or sexual abuse. It can be caused by assault, bullying, an untimely death, natural disasters. When we grow up in a low joy environment, we will lack the ability to resolve type B traumas. As a result, we will be easily triggered into distressing emotional states. We'll also find it very difficult to bond in life-giving relationships. Fear and anxiety grow, and we will wear masks to hide our pain. Type B trauma causes the brain to feel overwhelmed and craving beeps. Now, here's the thing about trauma. You can experience a traumatic event, horrific. And if somebody will help you process that traumatic event, can be the Lord, can be a person, can be both. But if they will help you walk through that trauma and process it, then that event, that terrible, whatever it was, event, will not be stored in your brain as trauma. If it's not processed adequately, your brain will store it as trauma, and it will be stored with all the emotions and beliefs, and it will also contain something called mycotoxins. And mycotoxins are the most deadly form of chemical in your body, and it's the number one cause of cancer. So right there is reason enough for those of you who might think, well, I don't need to look at my past. I'm doing fine. I'm doing good. Well, you might be, but you might not be. You might have all these dendrites that are holding that traumatic event along with the mycotoxins in it that's actually hurting your physical health. So that reason alone is enough for us to ask the Lord, invite the Lord into our past. So, any questions on the trauma train? The good news is when we have trauma, we just make sure we get the help we need, ask for the help, process it, and then your body stores it in a whole different location in your brain and in a whole different way with no mycotoxins. And no ability for that memory to flare up when you're triggered. Because that's what will happen often, right? Lack of return to joy skills. Another factor that leads to fake joy is the inability to return to joy when we experience upsetting emotions. One of the main reasons people seek false joy is because they lack the ability to stay relationally connected to others when experiencing pain. So that's one of those 18 relational skills that we learn how to stay connected with people when we're hurting. Not just reach out to people, but connect to people and stay connected until we process the pain. There's six basic unpleasant emotions that we must learn to experience and process. Oh, I missed a slide here. So there it is, type A and type B. I forgot to click. Okay, there you go. The six unpleasant emotions that we must learn to experience and process without disconnecting from people in Yahweh. Anger, fear, sadness, shame, disgust, and hopeless despair. It is critical that we purpose our hearts and learn how, by watching other people do it, by watching the Lord do it, learn how to feel these emotions and at the same time stay connected in our relationships and not withdraw, not run away from, not escape, not go grab a beep instead, right? If you've got an addiction, if the only way you're gonna get out of that addiction is if you can put that wall up and instead of turning to the addiction, you turn to people and the Lord, both. It's the only way. And it's like the Lord put us together on purpose to, and He's told us that. You know, it's not a surprise that we're to help the weak. We're to be there. We're to be that life raft that will help keep them afloat while they're walking the walk and talking the talk, right? So, and we have to be able to do it with all six of these emotions when we feel them. So, here's an example of how you can stay relational when you're feeling these emotions. For example, you could say, I'm very sad right now. And I'll just say it to Julie. Julie, I'm just feeling really sad right now. But you're so important to me, and our relationship's so important. So much more important than what I'm feeling. And I'm so sad, I just want to go hide. I just want to go in my room and pull the covers over my head. But I'm not going to do that. I know you love me. I know you care about me. And I just need help. I don't know what kind of help I need. I don't know. But I know I need help. And I know the answer's not for me to go grab a bag of chips and cover. I keep using chips. And no, I don't do that, but I don't know. Somebody in here must like chips. So I stay in that. Julie, can you pray for me? Hey, would you facilitate a God encounter? Would you help me get to the root of the sadness? I don't really even know why I'm so sad. And I stay connected. I stay in that. And it might take me a month or two or three, and it might, you know, but eventually, it works. It will happen. I have another t-shirt. If you don't quit, you'll win. Just don't quit. Most people give up. I had somebody years ago, 30 years ago or so, before we moved here, tell me, she said, Rhonda, don't you ever give up because you might just be on the brink of a miracle.
Yes.
And that has stuck with me all these years. We don't know what tomorrow will bring. You don't know if that next God encounter with the Lord is going to turn everything for you.
Right. Yeah.
Just don't quit.
Right.
So, and you can, you know, as you're reaching out for help, you can word that to your own language. That's just an example of how to ask for help. If we lack these skills of being able to reach out for help, we're likely to become stuck in our negative emotions, and our relational brain will disconnect from other people, even if we want to stay connected. Being stuck in negative emotions combined with relational disconnection will leave our brains in acute distress, and our brain will crave relief. And guess what it's going to tell you?
Beep, beep,
it wants.
Beep, beep.
Beep, beep. Beep, beep.
And it will, because you know why? Because an addiction creates literal anatomy in your brain. It has it has literal anatomy. And so, and the brain science has discovered, they used to think you could break a habit or an addiction, and now they've learned by studying the brain, you can't. Here's how you have to do it. You have to lay on top of that addiction a brand new addiction. The thing that is good for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of running to this, I'm going to run to a person. I'm going to run to Yahweh. And you do it consistently, day after day, whatever it is. Instead of eating ice cream and barbecue potato chips, which used to be my addiction, I told my brain, nope, I'm not eating that. I'm going to eat an apple with peanut butter. And I saw it in my mind, because your brain thinks in images, not words first. Words come second, image comes first. And I began to, I want ice cream and chips, nope, I go get that apple and peanut butter. And I filled in that rut in my brain that was addicted to ice cream and chips. And it took time, but over time I lost that intense craving that I had. I lost it, and I began to look forward to my apple and peanut butter. And now I can't have peanut butter, so I had to shift to find something else. And I have. It's all good. One day I'm going to eat peanut butter and ice cream and chips in eternity on that tree of life. It's hanging there. It'll have a branch with my name on it.
We have a cookbook for you.
Yeah. I know. Thankfully, I have a cookbook that's good for me. All right. Any questions on that one?
Here.
Oh, back here. And then David up front.
Yeah, we said reminded me of what my aunt, one of mom's sisters, used to always say. Like, she said it so much, we kind of took it for granted. She always said, don't give up on the brink of a miracle. Mm-hmm. She would write that in birthday cards, Christmas cards, any kind of holiday cards. She would say it while driving me and my brother to a restaurant, all the time. And one day when I was a teenager, I asked her, So, when are we on a brink of a miracle? And she said, you're on the brink of a miracle every day. I said, so what you're saying is don't give up any day. That's never the right day to give up. She said, that's right. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Josh, that actually is who said that to me 30 years ago. It was your own. She wrote it in a book she gave me. And I thought I remembered it all these years. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so I've got a question. We're going to take it to the Lord too, but it was just popping up. So this idea of, okay, so we have something unhealthy, like, sure, that we run to. And so we say, okay, well, I don't want to run to that, so I'm going to run to a healthy option, apples and peanut butter. Can something healthy be a beep?
Absolutely.
Right, so even though I say, okay, I'm not going to do ice cream, I'm going to do apple, and again, I'm not saying that you shouldn't eat apples and peanut butter, but if I'm going to replace my negative food with a positive food, am I still, do you see what I'm asking?
Oh yeah, it all depends on your motive.
Yeah. Yeah.
The reason you're running to that apple and peanut butter.
Yeah.
Now for me, the ice cream and chips, sugar is more addictive than cocaine to the human body.
Oh.
Yeah, it really is. That's what science tells us. So for me, the ice cream was an addiction, full-on driven chemical in my body. The apple and peanut butter wasn't a chemical thing, it wasn't a, you know, and I over time learned why that ice cream and chips was so big in my world. I found out. At the time, I didn't know it from a wound. So anyway, it all depends on your motive. Idols are only idols because of your motive. So if you're running to apples and peanut butter instead of the Lord to try to get something in here, that's not, it might not be as detrimental to your physical body, but it's going to still have its effect. Great question. Mm-hmm. Great comment. Excellent. All right, anybody else? Okay. All right, let's keep going. Two types of pseudo-joy. If we live our lives with a performance-based mentality, seeking the approval of others, it may allow us to avoid rejection and attract positive attention. But that isn't real joy. Working long hours, avoiding mistakes, and doing a good job are not harmful. But when the results are more important than our relationships, more important than our spouse, children, parents, then it's extremely damaging to everyone involved, especially yourself. The two most common sources of pseudo-joy, codependency and attachment to food. Those are the two most common sources in our society of pseudo-joy. Codependency is a common form of false joy. It's based on manipulating others to get what we want. Codependency is common in both predators and possums. People who operate with predatory behaviors create the illusion of dominance. They mistakenly believe they can maintain order and avoid chaos by being the one in control. Their behavior creates a low joy life that promotes beeps. By rewarding those who behave and by using shame and contempt for those who won't do what they want them to do. People who operate like a possum actively seek to manipulate the behavior of others. Possums engage in codependency to avoid the loss of a valued relationship. To hold on to that relationship, they grow a false identity to please them and avoid conflict. They will do almost anything to avoid being rejected. To avoid rocking the boat, they rescue other people from pain and make excuses for inappropriate behaviors and abuse. Codependent behaviors keep you stuck. Without genuine, healthy relationships, it's impossible to grow joy. So, first thing I recommend for everyone here is look at your relationships. Are they healthy? Number one, are they healthy? Are you healthy in it? Are you responding to that other person in a healthy way? And is that other person responding to you in a healthy way? And if not, you got some work to do. And if it is, then you can grow joy. I'm glad to be with you in that relationship. And you can invite other people into it. A healthy, mature, gentle protector leader, one of the things we'll look at later that they regularly do is they know how to create joy in a group of people in healthy relationships. And it's a skill, it's a relational skill. They've learned it, they model it, and then we get to learn it from them. And so in that kind of environment, codependency won't happen. They won't let it happen. A gentle protector leader will recognize the codependent stuff going on and they'll address it kindly and lovingly because it's detrimental for that relationship. All right, let's look at food. There's my barbecue chips and ice cream.
That's amazing.
I know, I found it on the internet. I thought there's somebody else out there that knows the value of ice cream and chip. My sister, who happens to be with my husband right now, she and I, when we were young, 20, early 20s, were sitting there eating ice cream one day, and I happened to have a bag of barbecue chips, and I happened to reach over and grab a chip, and I thought, ooh, that ice cream and chip tastes good. So then she tried it, and we were like, this is heavenly. And we experimented with different flavors. My mouth's watering. We tried, I know, I can tell you the brand of ice cream, I can tell you the brand of barbecue chips, I can tell you the flavors, what's the best, what's not, don't try it, it's not worth it. Anyway, and so that was my crazy thing I would go to anytime I had upset. I was addicted to it full on. And anytime she came to visit or I went to see her, that was our tradition. Every night we'd have a big old bowl, and every time. So we were teasing the other day, we're both on the health diet. I looked at her, I said, well, I guess the barbecue chips and ice cream are out. She said, yeah, I guess so. So anyway, I ate that for years.
Yeah.
And probably 20 years later, I mean, every night I would have ice cream and chips. And if I didn't have ice cream or chips in the house, my wonderful, serving, loving, servant-hearted husband would go to the store and buy them. So he learned really early on in our marriage, never let us run out of ice cream or chips. We could run out of toilet paper, but you better not run out of ice cream or chips. Yeah. It was terrible. It really, I understand an addiction now, because it was a full-on addiction. It really took me quite some time and help the Lord get rid of it, to get it out of my life, and understanding my brain and how it works, and fighting the fight. I had to fight the fight to get that out of me. So I still love it. Do I have to have it? No, I haven't. I don't have to have it, and I haven't had that in years and years. Suzanne blessed me for my birthday last year and found some organic barbecue potato chips and ice cream that I could have, no sugar, no dairy. And we had an ice cream chip party a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. And that was sweet, mm-hmm. Great, but it didn't do what that used to do to me, yeah. Thankfully.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, the sugar one there that's so addictive. So this pursuit of fake joy is real. It might be shopping for you. It might be jumping out of an airplane and with a parachute or bungee cord or something. It might be adrenaline. And there's all kinds of those things that we look to. But this unhealthy attachment to food, the thing is that Yahweh created our brains at birth to bond to the people who feed us. Food is a huge bonding agent. And actually, general protector leaders know that, and they use it in forming joy. Julie uses it with her cooking, and Cindy does too, and Suzanne. There is value in it, and it can be healthy, and it can be unhealthy. So when those who feed a baby are joyful and attentive to his or her needs, that infant develops a secure bond. But the opposite is true. If they're not happy, if they're not joyful and secure, then that baby will be consistently emotionally disconnected, and that baby will bond to the food instead of the person. Drugs, alcohol, and sugar all release powerful pleasure-causing chemicals in the brain that feel a lot like joy, but it's actually counterfeit. And like I said, sugar is actually more addictive than cocaine. When we consume these substances, our brains experience euphoria, a sense of well-being, and impaired judgment that causes us to crave more. These substances may numb the pain, which might be temporarily forgotten, but it's actually a false sense of pleasure. One of the techniques that I learned from Dr. Mormon in Canada, the lady I told you about, the neuroscientist who studied the imagination all these years, she said that the best way to break a habit or an addiction, because your brain sees in images first, images are way more powerful than words to your brain, is that whatever you're addicted to, when you see it, when it pops up, when the thought, when you, by the time you hear or are aware of the thought, your brain's already seen the image. And so it projects the image there. And you see it, he said, she said, the way to break it, to bring it into non-existence is you put a big red X in your mind. You let your mind visualize it, because pictures are powerful to your brain. Big red X over that, for me it was over that image of ice cream and barbecue chips. And I see it as the blood of Yeshua. Mm-hmm. And then the next step you do after you've put the blood of Yeshua over it, see, that image tells your brain, I don't want that. If you don't do that, and you tell your brain, I don't want that, without the image, your brain has to take a two-step process to hear you. The red X tells it instantly, I don't want that. So if I say to you, I want you to picture with your imagination, I want to eat a chocolate ice cream cone. Everybody able to picture that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I want you to do this one. Do not eat a chocolate ice cream cone.
I see it.
I still see it.
Negative commands to your brain are not naturally assimilated. Your brain is wired for positive commands. Eat. Instead of saying eat an ice cream cone, you say eat an apple. But to tell your brain do not is a two-step process for your brain. Your brain has to first picture you doing it. Then it has to figure out how it's going to make you stop. Are you going to throw it in the trash? Are you going to dump it down the sink? Are you going to hand it to somebody else? And so you can get stuck easily. And then at the same time, your addiction's kicking in saying, but I want it, I want it, I want it, I need it, I gotta have it at the same time. So that's why she's learned, Dr. Harmon said, you put that big red X, the blood of Yeshua, over that image of that ice cream cone. Now picture yourself with the chocolate ice cream cone. Now this time, when you say, I don't want to eat it, put that big red X over it. Your brain got the message instantly. Oh, I know what that means. Okay, what do you want? Now tell your brain what you want to eat instead.
Vanilla.
Sally said vanilla. Tell your brain what you want to eat instead. She said vanilla. Ice cream instead of chocolate.
That was the first thing I saw. I didn't even.
Too late, your brain talked to you.
Apple.
So now you can take that method and apply it everywhere, anywhere. You find yourself thinking bad thoughts about Sally, which probably won't happen. When you think of bad thoughts about Sally, stop, red X, or just slap that red X all over it, and then start Lord, thank you for Sally. I just bless her. I just love her. Thank you for her. And you just fill in that gap in your brain. You're filling in a ditch, because addictions form a ditch in your brain. It's like a super highway. It's called white matter. You've got, and we'll talk about that just later, this white matter in your brain that travels faster than thought, and that's called a habit, an addiction. And what you have to do is fill that ditch in with something new. You got to change your behavior around that addiction, around that habit. If you every Thursday at 3 o'clock in the morning you do XYZ, then you got to, every Thursday at 3 in the morning you got to do ABC, and something totally different part of the house, different whatever, everything. You got to reset this day and put in a new way of living in that place, and create a whole new white matter train. Okay. All right. Any questions, thoughts, confessions? No. And you might want to Red X the ice cream.
Yeah.
Hear what people going to the store tonight.
Both flavor.
Yeah, vanilla and chocolate. Yeah. When I first was teaching this and I didn't do the Red X, man, every time I'd go home and get out the ice cream chip, just talking about it made me want it. So I'm all good.
Me too.
So anyway, all right. Everybody good? Got a good day?
Yeah.
Survived the afternoon. It's the hardest time to teach. Y'all did great. We didn't have to stop for y'all to take a nap. It was good. Great group. I'm excited to have this time with you all. And so I will see you back here tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
Good.